the Olivet Discourse, and that covers chapters 24 and 25 in the Gospel of Matthew. And just to review a little bit about, I'm not going to do a lot of review here, but just a little bit about what we talked about last week. And by the way, I have now three of the weeks that we've done, I have the handout for. So if you didn't get one of these handouts, you can come by and pick them up after the time tonight. But this chart in particular, I think, is something that you could might be helpful to you in the future. And I've got all of this in my computer if you ever need it in the future to look at it for any reason. But the Olivet Discourse is when Jesus went out onto the Mount of Olives, and it was during the last week before his crucifixion. He was daily going into Jerusalem, and he would have people who would gather around him for him to teach. He had some, early in the week, he had some confrontations with some of the Pharisees and those religious Jews, which they had tracked him all the way, his whole ministry, no need to let up at the last minute, I guess. And he would go into Jerusalem at the temple area and teach during the day, and then he would go back out to the Mount of Olives at night with his closest disciples. And on one occasion where Jesus was there in Jerusalem, some of the disciples said, "Well, look at this fabulous temple. Look at these stones, and look at the ornate nature of this temple." And by all accounts, it was something to behold. It was just an unbelievable sight, beautiful, ornate, and an architectural wonder, really, in many ways. And it took them all together, I think it was about 50-something years from the time that King Herod began to build it till it was completed. He helped in the rebuilding of it, and so it was really something. And Jesus made the statement there in verse 2. He said, "Assuredly I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down." And so they go back out on the mountain, and they ask these questions that are given here in verse 3. They said, "Tell us, when will these things be?" Referring to when the temple would be destroyed like that. And it says, what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" And we mentioned last week that there's two things that are real important to help in the interpretation of the rest of the chapter, especially here in chapter 24. The one thing to remember is that in the disciples' minds, those disciples that were right there with him on the Mount of Olives, and they had no doubt a lengthy time together. It's far more than what's recorded in Scripture that they talked about, almost certainly. But in their mind, if they started talking about this temple being destroyed, in their minds it would have been the same thing as the end of the age, and they would have said this will be the time when Jesus comes. Now, they were looking for Jesus to come immediately, you know, right away after this happened. And so Jesus begins to answer their question, but if you look at how he answers it here, and if you put it all together, everything that's here in chapter 24, he does answer their question, especially if you go and look in the account in Luke. He does talk about what happened in AD 70 when the temple was destroyed. Very, very clearly there he's talking about that. And so at some point he talked to them about what would happen in their lifetime. But if you look at the account here in Matthew, to me it seems very clear that he's talking about something that would be much more than what happened in AD 70 in Jerusalem. He's talking about the end of time and when the end of the age would come and when his return would take place. And I think anyone, just like we talked about at the beginning of this series, anyone who just sat down and read Matthew 24 would come pretty quickly to the conclusion that he was talking about something beyond AD 70, and that he's talking about something that is literal, something that will literally happen in the future. And the reason we're looking at this is I believe this is where you see where Jesus answers the question, will the rapture occur prior to the tribulation, or will it occur during the tribulation, or will it occur after the tribulation? I think this is the section that makes that It's the one place in Scripture where Jesus talks about these things in this way. And so it's an outstanding place to look. And I think I shared with y'all at the very beginning of the series too this, and I think this is important to remember as well, is that the other scriptures that you have in the New Testament that are about the rapture, if you take what Jesus said and you try to make it fit into a template of a pre-trib rapture, it is very difficult to make this fit into that template. And by that I just mean the people who believe in a pre-tribulation rapture, they have certain things that they say had to happen. Well, if you take what Jesus is teaching here and try to make that fit, it is very difficult to make it fit. But if you use this as the template, if you use Matthew 24 as the template and take those other verses from other places, Revelation, 2 Thessalonians 2, some things that are in Daniel, some things that are in Isaiah, and you use this to plug those things into, then it fits. And I use the illustration of the glove that O.J. Simpson was trying on in that trial. Do you remember that? He was trying to pull that glove on. Well, if you try to make what Jesus says here fit into a pre-trib rapture, it's hard to get that glove on. But if you use this as the template and bring those other verses in, it fits, I think, very nicely. Now, if you look at the outline that I've given you here of Matthew 24 and 25, we looked last week at the background. We looked at the question that Jesus was asked by the disciples, and in their minds they were saying, when is all this going to happen? When is the end of the age, the sign of your coming? It was all one question. But in verse 4, Jesus begins to answer, and he says that there are some things here that will take place that are like labor pains. And he mentions, you know, some things. He says, don't let anyone deceive you. There will be false Christ. There'll be wars and rumors of wars in verse 6. He says, but don't let these things trouble you because the end is not yet. Verse 7, nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. Famines, pestilences, earthquakes in various places. And he says, all of these are the beginning of sorrows. And that word sorrows, the word in the original Greek means birth pains or labor pains. And so if you take it as labor pains, what do you know about labor pains? We talked about this last week, but what do you know? You know that when labor pains begin, the birth is not far away. And so that's really the picture that you get here. When you begin to see all of these things and they begin to happen with greater and greater intensity, which each one of these things that are mentioned here, it seems like they are happening even in our time with greater intensity all the time. That means that the time is drawing near, more and more near. And then we looked in verses 9 through 14 that Christians will be hated and martyred for the sake of the gospel. That's one of the things that leads up to the very end, as you begin to see Christians being martyred for the sake of the gospel more and more. And folks, I'll tell you something. As I look at some things that are being talked about out loud now, you know, if you could talk about something out loud, it tends to diminish it as far as being something that people would just want to suppress. But I mean, they're talking about hate speech. But now they've actually begun to actually name Christians, people like us who are Bible-believing Christians. If you listen to what's going on in some of the arguments coming from the far left, even in our country, they are talking about how we are the problem. We are expendable. So I don't think we are very far away. I don't want to put a time on it, but you know, within the next decade, it would not surprise me, regardless of who wins these next few elections, if the left ever gets complete control again, we would be in trouble. And you could look at what has happened in Canada. Usually whatever you see happening in Canada, you can wait about 10 years, and that kind of leftist, liberal, anti-Christian stuff will happen here. And so we're on a path that's just right behind them in those kind of things. And so those are the things that we looked at last week. And I want to start tonight with verse 15. And I'd like to get all the way through to the end of verse 35 if we can. We may not make that, but we'll see how far we can get. And what we don't finish tonight, we'll finish up next Wednesday night. And so all of these birth pains that happen, you see Christians, followers of Jesus who are being martyred for their stand for the gospel. And then in verse 15, it says, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand." That is, whoever reads what is in Daniel, I believe, is what that's talking about. "Let him understand. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house, and let him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days, and pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath." And then he says this, Jesus says this, "For then," when you see those things, the abomination of desolation being and we'll talk about that in just a moment, what that is. But when you see that is the signal that the great tribulation has begun. And he says, "For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. And unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Then if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Christ,' or 'There,' do not believe it. For false Christ will arise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. And see, I have told you beforehand. Therefore, if they say to you, 'Look, he is in the desert,' do not go out. Or 'Look, he is in the inner rooms,' do not believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. For wherever the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered together." Now, there's a lot there. But the abomination of desolation, it's spoken of by the prophet Daniel. And what was Daniel prophesying? What is Jesus relating it to here? He's relating it to the beginning of this time of great tribulation. And what you have to really pay attention to, I believe, here is that he says there will be nothing like it since the beginning of the world till this time, no, nor ever shall be. In other words, it is a worldwide, we're talking about something that is cataclysmic, not just in Judea. It will be especially intense for people that are in Israel, because it will be related to who is in alliance with Israel there and turning against the Jewish people. But it will also be a persecution that will be worldwide. And then it says later on here, it says in verse 22 that unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved. Now, I know what happened in Jerusalem in AD 70. And if you've never studied that, it was horrendous. It was so bad that the people were actually turning to cannibalism. They were being starved out. It was a terrible ordeal, without any question. But what it talks about here is something that goes beyond just what happened in Jerusalem in AD 70. I think any fair reading of this, you'd have to say that Jesus is talking about something here that will be worldwide. In Revelation 3, verse 10, I think it is, he mentions there, again, that's the words of Jesus, he mentions there that it's something that will come on the whole world. And we know from Revelation 13 that we looked at several weeks ago that the Great Tribulation will be a time where the Antichrist will be in power, 2 Thessalonians 2. And then in Revelation 13, it will be a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a one-world economy. And on the economic part of it, if you don't take the mark of the beast, you can't buy or sell. Anyone who will not worship the beast, there's the religious part of it, And it says that power will be given to him over all people. And so Revelation 13 is clearly talking about something that is worldwide, not just what happened in Jerusalem. And so what Jesus is doing here, he's answering the question that they've asked, but he knows that it's not going to be during their lifetime that those things are going to happen. So what Jesus is doing is he is talking to the people who would live through all the Christian ages, and especially to those who are alive at the end of time. These verses, we seem to have a greater understanding of it probably than Christians did in the past, because we see some of these birth pains especially taking place in a greater intensity. But it is something to where the people that are alive in the last days, and he talks when he talks about the abomination of desolation, he's saying you need to understand when you see these things beginning to happen, then you will know that the time is very near. We're going to look at a portion of that beginning in verse 32 in just a moment. And so it's such a terrible time that if the days were not shortened, there would be no flesh left alive. And there's going to be many people trying to deceive people, saying that Christ is here or Christ is there. And he says, don't believe it. If you ever hear or see a news report that Jesus is meeting with some political group in the Middle East or anything like it, don't believe any of that, or that he's out in the desert teaching. We don't believe that. And the reason we don't is because he says here that as lightning, verse 27, as lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. In other words, you'll know it. When Jesus comes again, his people will hear the trumpet. We will be gathered to he will gather us to him. We don't have to go to him. He will gather us to himself. Is that clear, or have I muddied it up? I think it's a fair reading of this. Just if you just sat down and read it, you would say that Jesus is talking about something at the end of time, not something that happened in AD 70. So then you come to what I think is the key to what we've been talking about all of these weeks. And he says this in verse 29. You remember we talked about sequence words, words that indicate this happened, then this happened, and then this happened. A number of times that word then is used. But in verse 29, he says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the tribulation that he's just talked about, the great tribulation, he calls it, when all of these things have happened. And the great tribulation, as we saw, was talked about in a number of places in Scripture. The Revelation talks about the saints that will be martyred during the tribulation and all of that. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels, and here's what I believe is a picture of the rapture. He says he will send his angels with a great sound of the trumpet. You read 1 Thessalonians 4, it says, the voice of the archangel, the trump of God, will sound with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. And so if you just take it at face value as you read it, and you come to verse 29, Jesus says immediately after the tribulation of those days this will happen, and then the sign of the Son of Man will appear. And by the way, in verse 29, all of these things, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven. In other words, the foundations of the heavens will be shaken. There's no indication that anything like that happened in AD 70. There's nothing of that nature that happened at that time. And the sign of the Son of Man, we don't know for sure what that is. There's a lot of speculation. Some people say, well, the cross is the symbol of of Christ that's most known around the world. So maybe there'll be a great cross that'll be up in the night sky or coming in from space or that sort of thing. But I believe the sign of the Son of Man is just the simplest way to understand that is it is the Son of Man. They will see Jesus coming. Zechariah chapter 14 indicates that the whole world will see this when it begins to happen. And all the tribes of the earth, it says here, will mourn. They'll see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven. And again, when he went up to heaven in his ascension back to the right hand of the Father, the angel said, just as he was taken up from you and received into the clouds and out of sight, in the same way he will come again. And so we will be gathered together to him. And at that point, Jesus is coming back to earth, and we will immediately return with him. The dead in Christ will rise. We'll be caught up. That's the word rapture, by the way. The word where it says caught up, you have the. That's where we get the word rapture from the Latin language. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and he will gather his elect. And if you look, that word elect is used three times here in this section. Verse 22, it says, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Down in verse 24, if it was possible, it would even deceive the elect, those that are looking for Christ's return. And then he will gather together his elect from the four winds. And that description there of the rapture, I think, fits perfectly with what you see in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And so the great tribulation and then the rapture. And the last thing I want to cover tonight is that next point on the outline, and that is that those alive at the time will be able to know the time is near. If you look in verse 32, he gives a parable here. He says, now learn the parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near at the doors. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away. Now, one of the most problematic verses for everybody who tries to understand what's here in Matthew 24 is that verse 34, where it says, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Now, what did Jesus mean by that? Well, there's three major theories about what Jesus was talking about there. The first one is that he was talking about his disciples who were there with him on the Mount of Olives that night. Till this generation, this current generation that's alive now while I'm alive, they will not pass away till all these things be fulfilled. There's only one problem with that. All these things did not take place in the first century while that generation was alive. Those things were not fulfilled. All of these things that are mentioned here were not fulfilled. The second theory is that it's speaking about the Jewish race, but there's no indication anywhere in the way that this phrase is used where it speaks about a generation. A generation of like being a race that's not used in the Greek language in that way, and so that's really not a valid suggestion either. But I want to show you something here. If you look in verse 33, if you just put your finger on it and look very carefully at verse 33, he says, so you also, when you see all these things, what things? The things that he's just talked about. When you see all these things, know that it is near. And then down in verse 34, he mentions all these things again. And that's where he says, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. When you see, he's talking to the people who will see it, the people who are alive in that generation. When they see all of these things, when they begin to happen, will all happen within a generation. Within one generation of people. It's not going to drag on for hundreds of years. It's not going to drag on for, even many dozens of years. But it will be all within that generation of people. And so what Jesus is saying by this parable is that those who are alive at that time, they Even we today think we are seeing things that are leading up to it. We're seeing the birth pains for sure, but the people that are alive when he does come, and that may be us, they will be able to say, hey, this is it. You know, when they see the abomination of desolation set up, and again, you go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 to see that, what will happen there. When you begin to see those things, you'll know that it is near, even at the doors, he says. So we'll stop there for tonight. And the last point that I want to cover next week, which I think is the most important point of all, is that Jesus begins after this to just, he tells a couple of parables. He gives some other indications of things that, where he's just saying, be ready. Whatever you do, be ready. Because it's going to happen at an hour, at a day and an hour that you don't think. And so we've got to be ever alert. And I've always thought that believers who have some understanding of these things, as we hold our Bible in our hand, and we don't really have newspapers anymore, but as we see the events of the world taking place, we more than anybody else ought to have an understanding of what's taking place in the world. Because we look at things not just the way the world looks at it, is, you know, what nations are going to come to power, the geopolitical structure of the world and all of that. But the way we can look at it is God's redemptive plan, God's redemptive timetable as it unfolds. And we are to be ready, and part of being ready is to be busy. When he comes, he would find us working.